Beginning the current daf from Masechta Shabbos, daf Kuf Mem. We begin on the bottom line of Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara continues elaborating on our Mishnah of the previous daf, which spoke about different processes of food that are permitted on Shabbos. So our Gemara begins. V'noisten beibe mesanenes. Our Mishnah said that one is allowed to put an egg through a strainer of mustard, a thing that's generally used for mustard. However, in the case of putting the egg, that is allowed to be strained in the mustard strainer. So the Gemara explains, Toni Yaakov Karcha, continue on to the top of Kof Mem Amud Aleph. The reason is, although generally bayir is also to do and to strain things would be a isra on Shabbos, the reason is because here when you're straining the egg in the mustard strainer, it's only for color, and that is for the way that it looks. And that is because the yolk, which is the yellow of the egg, is good for coloring, and not the chelber, not the white part. Therefore, both the white and the yellow of the eggs are considered oichel, they're both food items, and therefore there's no what's called being bayir, selecting psoilus, something bad from the oichel that's good, because here they're both good elements. And here that we're doing the process that we're straining it through the egg strainer, through the mustard strainer, is only because of the color that we want. Therefore, that's not included in the iser of bar, and that's why there's no iser of doing that on Shabbos. So the Gemara continues, again, regarding preparing food, and specifically regarding mustard on Shabbos. Itmar, we learned. Chardel shalashu me'erev Shabbos. Regarding mustard that was needed from Erev Shabbos, that a mustard comes as a seed, and then has to be processed into the condiment that we know as mustard. So therefore, it was needed from Erev Shabbos, so lamachar, on the following day on Shabbos, Amar Rav. Rav says, memachay, you could dissolve it in either water or wine. However, it has to be done b'kli, only in a vessel. And that's, as Rashi explains, is mashma, that is the shinur that's necessary to permit it on Shabbos. Avalibiya, but not with one's hand, because by doing it by hand, that would dissolve it very well, and that would be a process that would be also in Shabbos. Amalei Shmuel asked him, biyad, what are you telling me that you can't do it with by hand on Shabbos? However, only you could do it with a kli? What do you mean? Atu kol yomim machule biyad? What do you mean? Do you think that every day that they process it by dissolving it, by using one's hand? Michael Chamorim, what do you think? It's a food item of donkeys? That's not how we prepare food that's generally eaten for humans. Rather, Shmuel says, and he argues, he says the exact opposite. He says, Memachay biyad, on Shabbos, what you're allowed to do is that you're only allowed to do it and dissolve it by hand, because that's not normally how it's done during the weekday. Generally, during the weekday, we use utensils. That is the human way of doing it. The Eina Memachay biklin, rather, on Shabbos, you cannot do it with a vessel, because during the weekday, that's how it's done. So to create a shinoi, not to do it in the regular way that it's done, although we're allowed to dissolve it, but it cannot be with a kli, it has to be done by hand. Sidmar, we learned that this was a machloikis. Rabbi Lazza Omar, echadze ve'echadze aser. Although we just brought a machloikis here between Rav and Shmuel, if it was necessary to do it either with hand and not with a kli, or with a kli and not by hand, Rabbi Lazza said that both formats are aser. That it's prohibited to do it both by hand and with a kli. Rabbi Yechanan Omar, echadze ve'echadze muter. Yechanan said to the other end of the extreme, he said that both by hand and by vessel is permitted. So we really have four different versions, either both are muter or both are aser. Or only Yad is mutter and clean not, or only Kli is mutter and Yad not. So the Gemara brings out the halacha, Abaye and Rava Damer Tavayu, both Abaye and Rava both said, Ein halacha k'reb Yechanan. Halacha does not follow Rabbi Yechanan, that he wanted to say that both formats are permitted, both by hand and both by vessel. They said the halacha is for sure not like him. But then the Gemara says, they come Rabbi Yechanan b'shitzed Rabbi Laza. Afterwards, Rabbi Yechanan went and followed the opinion of Rabbi Laza. That is, he reversed his opinion, that he said that both are permitted. And he said, like Rabbi Laza, that both are forbidden to do it either by hand or by a vessel, again, to dissolve this mustard that was needed from before Shabbos in wine or water. But then it says, come Rabbi Laza b'shitzed Yishmul. Although now Rabbi Yechanan went and he followed the opinion of Rabbi Laza to say both are aser, Rabbi Laza, who had originally said that both are aser, he went and he changed it to follow the opinion of Shmuel that said that it's permitted at least to do it by hand. Now, after the whole thing was finished, the round robin, Abaye v'Rava Damer Tavayu, both of them said that now, who is the halacha like? Halacha Rabbi Yechanan. Although he originally said the halacha is not like him, but now that Rabbi Yechanan reversed his opinion, and he went and he said that the halacha is like Rabbi Laza, so therefore, since he says both by Yad and Makli is Aser, that is how we paskin, and Abaye and Rava agree that each one is going to be forbidden. And now the Gemara illustrates this with a few different stories to describe how people had done this, had prepared the mustard on Shabbos, which again, according to Abaye and Rava, they agree that it doesn't make a difference how you're doing it, either by hand or by vessel, it's aser on Shabbos. As the Gemara brings, Ime de Abaye Avdile, the mother of Abaye, did it for him. She went and she dissolved this mustard. But Leochle didn't eat it, as we just said before, that Abaye and Rava both agree that it doesn't make a difference how you're going to do it, it's aser to dissolve the mustard in water or wine on Shabbos. The baser de Zeira avdule Rav Chia bar Ashi b'le'achol. The wife of Zeiri, she went and she made this dissolving of, completed the mustard on Shabbos Rav Chia bar Ashi, and he didn't eat it. So she said to him, L'rabach avdile, I did this for your teacher, that is Zeiri, her husband. V'ochel, and he ate it. V'ad lo'echel, you're not going to eat. How can you not eat? Your own Rebbe, he went and he ate what I did. So obviously he agreed that it's mutter, and here you go, and you're not eating it. Amar Rav bar Shiva. I was standing in front of Ravina. They went and they did this for him with the middle part of a garlic. And he ate it. Obviously, he held that it was not awesome. However, the halacha, the Gemara brings Amar Zutra. Less hilchasa chol hanishmais. The halacha does not follow all the different opinions that we just cited. We had many different versions about what is allowed to be done on Shabbos regarding finishing up the mustard or not. It says the halacha doesn't follow any one of them. Rather, it's like the following statement that was said. Chardol shalosh erev Shabbos, regarding mustard that was needed from before Shabbos, lemocher mamchu bein biyad bein bekli. The following day, you're allowed to dissolve it, whether by hand or with a vessel. And v'noyis l'teich advash, you could put inside of it honey. V'lo yitrif, however, you're not allowed to beat it. And beating is like the way you take with an egg and you beat it in a plate with a spoon. You mix it very strongly. That is something that it's usher to do with this a mustard on Shabbos. Elam arav, but you could, the only thing you could do is you could mix it. However, this mixing, again, could be done, whether biyad, with one's hand, or bekli, even with the utensil. So now, on the same topic, the Gemara brings, shachalayim sheshochkon me'erev Shabbos, running cress that was grinded from before Shabbos. So the following day on Shabbos, you're allowed to put into this kress oil and vinegar. And you could put into it amisa, which the Gemara is going to explain momentarily what is amisa. However, you cannot beat it. As we said, that's doing it very strong. Rather, you can mix it together. Shum shiriska me'erev Shabbos, we've got garlic that was chopped and ground down very finely from Erev Shabbos. L'mocher noisn l'toichai pool of grease. And so the following day on Shabbos, you could put into it beans and split beans. However, lo yishchik el ma'arav. And again, the similar type of concept. You can't grind it, beat it down very strongly. El ma'arav, rather, you could mix it. So now the Gemara explains what we said before, that we said, u'mamshech has amis l'toichan, that regarding the cress, that you're allowed to put into it the amisa on Shabbos, my amisa. What does it mean, amisa? Now the Gemara says, ninya, that's a reference to mint. So from this statement we learn that this that we're permitting you to put in this mint into the cress on Shabbos teaches as a secondary idea that obviously mint is very good to mix it together with cress, and that's what we're telling you, that this that you would generally want to mix the mint with cress, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So now the Gemara resumes discussing our Mishnah on the previous daf that said, you're allowed to make anumlin on Shabbos. So the Gemara brings a braisa that elaborates and will explain to us what this is. Tan Rabban will end up anumlin b'Shabbos. You're allowed to make anumlin b'Shabbos. However, in oisin aluntis, but you can't make aluntis. So ve'ezi anumlin ve'ezi aluntis. What are these two things that we said? One anumlin is mutter, and aluntis that it's aser. So anumlin is yayin udvash upapon. That's wine, honey, and pepper. That again, you're allowed to make on Shabbos. Aluntis, which is forbidden on Shabbos to be made, is yayin yashin. That's old wine, umaim tzlun, clear water, and varfarasimun and balsam. And the reason is, as the Bryce explains, the avdi lebe masus lemaker. That's what the bathhouse attendants, they would make for the person to cool off after we take a bath. And that is, this is a beverage that's not drunk for one's thirst. Rather, it's to cool off after the heat of the bath. And therefore, it's very similar to refuah, to healing, for a therapeutic value. And therefore, we know that refuah is also on Shabbos. That's why this drink cannot be made versus anumlin could be made on Shabbos. So the Gemara brings a story that Omer Rav Yosef, one time I went after Marukva to the bathhouse. So Kinafki, when he went out, Asoi, he brought me Ashkin Chamer Chad Kosa to drink one cup of wine. V'chashi, and I felt, that is from the cold that I felt going through my body, that Mibeinosa de Reishi v'aturfa de Kari, from the hair of my head down to the nails of my foot. That's the sensation, how cold I felt in my body. The Ashkin Kisachrin, if they would have given me another cup to drink, have a Mastafino Dilma Menakili Mischusa de Amadasi. I was afraid that I would lose from my merit from the coming world. And that is, I'm afraid that I would have gotten so sick that I shouldn't have died, that I would have been using up my Olam Haba if I would have drank another cup. On that, the Gemara asks, is it really so dangerous to drink this cup after you go ahead and you take a hot bath? V'marukfa d'shasi kol yema, what do you mean? Every day Marukfa did this. He would drink it and nothing happened to him. So what's he getting all caught up about this, that he was afraid that if he would have drank one more cup, it would have totally been a death sentence, and to be saved would use up his oil mahamu. Now the Gemara says, Shani Marukfu, the Dash Pei Marukfu is different because he was used to it. He did it all the time, and therefore it wasn't something that was so dangerous because it was something that his body got used to, and therefore for him it wasn't a big deal. But for him that he never did it, the sensation that he felt drinking that cup of wine after taking the hot bath, one of them already felt for through his whole body. Another one would have been using up from his Olam Haba. Now we continue with the next mission. Again, continuing the theme about making preparations for food items. So the mission begins. Ein shayrin es achiltis bepoishin. Not allowed to soak chiltis in warm water. And that's the type of beverage that they would drink for refuah, for therapeutic value. And that's why you're not allowed to make it on Shabbos, because you cannot make refuah on Shabbos. Avol noisin, however, you're allowed to put the chiltis l'teich ha-choymetz into vinegar, and then you could go ahead and you dip your food in there. And the Gemara later is going to explain why can't you soak it. You're just allowed to put it into vinegar, but you can't soak it into vinegar. So the Mishnah continues, ve'ein shoylin esar kershinin. You're not allowed to float the vetches. And that is, they would float the water, they would float it on top of water in the vessel to separate the psoilus, that's the waste matter or surrounding it on the top, and the water would help it separate as it's taught in the Mishnah, Mesechtes Ben, Daf Yudalet. So therefore that you're not allowed to do, because that's Isra of Boyer on Shabbos. And similarly, v'lei shofen oisin, you're not allowed to rub the vetches on Shabbos, that is to do it by hand, that's again taking off the psoilus, the outer husk, because that's again included in the malach of boyer of separating psoilus from eichel, which is forbidden. Avol noisin l'mtecha kvar, but you're allowed to put it into a sieve. And that is, although sometimes the psoilus, the outer husk will fall off through the holes of the sieve and it's going to be creating boyer, however, since it happens by itself, that is not something that we're concerned about. And similarly, l'mtecha kakol, you're also allowed to put it into a basket, again, although that it might separate on its own and thereby creating boyer, but since you're not doing it directly, it's permitted to do that on Shabbos. So the Mishnah continues, in kovrin es hateven b'chvara, you're not allowed to sift the straw in the sieve. And that is, straw is something that's made from the stalks, that they would cut it with certain types of utensils, and they would take the entire straw, the tail of the stalk, and they would create teven straw out of it. So you cannot sift it in the sieve to get rid of all the different parts of it that are not fit to be consumed. And similarly, you're not allowed to put it on a very high place as to go down an incline so that the chaff should fall off. And the moitz, the chaff, is from the beard, so to speak, of the stalk, which is the top part of it that has this extra part that's not fit to be consumed. And they would sift it in the sieve that to get rid of the chaff that's there. That is not allowed to be done on Shabbos, again, because this is a problem about the different malachas of bur that apply to it. Avol noitlu b'chvar, but you're allowed to take it with a sieve with the intention v'noisin l'techa eves, to go put it into a trough for the animals to eat it. And that is, although that by itself the chaff will fall through because you're putting it in a sieve to transport it in, but since the halacha is like Reb Shimon, that he says that what's called davish ein meskamen, something that's not intended to be done, is mutter. So since here it's not a secretion, it's not inevitable that it's going to be sorted and sifted by transporting it with the sieve. So although it might happen by itself, however, since it's not intended and it's not inevitable, therefore that's permitted to be done on Shabbos, and that's a way to go ahead and get rid of some of the basilis, some of the outer husk, the chaff, to do that by transporting to the trough in that way through the sieve. Now the Gemara elaborates on the concepts of our mission. Iboilu, they had the following question. Shara, if one did soak, that is, he soaked the chilsis in warm water, which our Mishnah said that it's aser. My, what's the halacha? What is the consequence? So Tirgama Rav Ada Nersho Kamed Rav Yosef, Shara Chayev Chatas, you soaked it, you're liable for Chayev Chatas. I thought the Gemara asked, Omalei Baya, Elimiata Shara Umtze, if someone soaks a raw piece of meat on Shabbos b'maya in water, Hochi Nami de Mechayev, he also is going to be liable? What do you mean? There's nothing wrong with soaking a piece of meat in water. In other words, the same thing he's asking is, biblically, what are you doing wrong when you're soaking this chiltis in warm water? You're not doing one Lama Tes Malachas. Abaye says, Midrabanan, this whole iser of soaking the chiltis in warm water on Shabbos was only a rabbinic iser. That you shouldn't do it the way it's normally done during the weekday. And that the Rabbanan did not allow you to do something what's called a uvde dechal, which is a weekday mundane type of activity. And therefore, since that's how you do it during the weekday, so you cannot soak it on Shabbos. However, Minatari, there's nothing wrong. And therefore, of course, you're not going to be chayiv for a chiyiv chatas. And that the Gemara asks, Boyimene Rabbi Yechanan Rabbi Yanai. Now, Our Mishnah tells us that you're not allowed to soak the schiltis in warm water. What's the halacha? You're allowed to soak it in cold water. Somebody asked, he says, it's forbidden. He says, what do you mean? But not to know. We learned in our Mishnah. Ain't sure in the schiltis, but punishment. Our Mishnah says you're not allowed to soak the schiltis in warm water. But the inference is, but in cold water it's permitted. How can you say it's forbidden? Amalei, so he said to him, wait a second. Im Kain, if that's the case, that I don't know how to explain the Mishnah more than you, meaning we're both looking in the Mishnah, and that's, so we're equals. So ma bein li ilcha, so what's the difference between me and you? In other words, obviously you're asking me the question, I know a little bit more. That is, masnit nichidahi. Although you're quoting me from our Mishnah follows an opinion of a yachid, of an individual. And that's Rabbi Yis's opinion. But the Rabbanan, as we're going to see in the Brisa, they say that even in cold water, it's forbidden to soak the chiltis in Shabbos, and that's what I told you. The Tanya has learned the Brisa. In shurness a chiltis, loy b'chamen b'lebitzayin, the Rabbanan hold, you now soak the chiltis in warm water, or even in cold water. And that's the ovdu d'chol, that's forbidden for this type of beverage that's generally drunk for therapeutic value. Rabbi Yossi Yomer, and he's the opinion of our Mishnah, b'chamen asa b'tzayin mutter, that he says that it's only in warm water, but in cold water it's permitted. And therefore I told you it's forbidden even with cold, again, because that's the opinion of the majority of the Chacham. Then the Gemara asks, parenthetically, l'may avdilei, what is chiltis used for that we're talking about over here, that it's for therapeutic value, that you can't do it the way it's normally done during the weekday, again, because of the d'chayil, together with the fact that it's for refuah, is liyuka d'liba, generally this is something that's drunk for the heaviness of the heart, it's a type of a faintness that a person feels, that's this chiltis, again, that you're not allowed to soak in warm water, or possibly even in cold water on Shabbos. So Gemara brings a story regarding this halacha. Rav Alcha bar Yosef chosh b'yukad liba. So he had this faintness of the heaviness of the heart. Asli kamei de marukva, he came to marukva, and he asked him what he should do. Amalei, zil shasi tlasa tikli, says you should drink three weights, that is, three weights of gold coins, chiltasa of this chiltis, betlasa yayme, on 3 days. So Azal Ishta Chamsha b'Shabbos, so the first day he drank was on Thursday. Umali Shabbos, then he drank on Friday. Now, Litzafra, Azal Shal Beit Medrash, so the following day he came to the Beit Medrash. What should he do on Shabbos? Again, this is a beverage of refuah. And again, we said that this is something that you can't soak on Shabbos because of Uvdu D'chol. So he says, what should he do? He was supposed to drink it for 3 days in a row. He started Thursday, Friday. Now the third day of his medication is on Shabbos. What should he do? Amrilei, they said to him, Tanu de Bei Ravada. They learned in the Beit Medrash Ravada. V'amrilo, and some say, Tanu de Bei Bar. Baravada, Shoisa Adam Kava Kavam, and a person could drink a kav or even two kavim of this beverage, and doesn't have to be concerned. That is, this chiltis is what's called a Michael Bream, it's something that healthy people drink. And just like you'd like to drink, for example, like a hot tea, although it might be therapeutic for your throat, so also this chiltis, although you're drinking it for refuah purposes, is no problem because regular people drink it also, and therefore that's mutter. So Amalhu, he said to them, I had no question about that I'm allowed to drink this on Shabbos, because even without the therapeutic value of this drink, it's a beverage. And we learned in the Mishnah that every beverage that's generally drank as a beverage could be drunk, even though you're drinking it for healing purposes. The question I had was, am I allowed to soak it? Because we learned in our Mishnah, you're not allowed to soak the chiltis, again, because of the d'chol. So my question was, what should I do? Again, it's the third day of my medication, and now I didn't prepare it before Shabbos, and could I soak it? So Amalahu Rav Chiya Bar Avin, so Rav Chiya Bar Avin told him when he came to ask this question over there in the Beis Medrash, B'didi Havu Uvda, with me I had a similar type of story, V'asoy Shiltil Ravad Bar Hava, I came and asked Ravad Bar Hava, V'lo'av B'yada, he wasn't able to resolve the question for me. Asoy Shiltil Rav Huna, they went to Rav Huna, V'amran, he said to me, the Hoche Kamer Rav, this is what Rav said to answer the question. You could soak it in cold water, and then you could put it in the sun again to go ahead and make it warm, because again, we said the idea is that generally it's soaked in warm water, and that's why you cannot do that on Shabbos, because it's the regular weekday type of activity. But there's a way to do that, is that you soak it in cold water, and then you put it in the sun, and thereby it's going to become warm that way. So he asked him, Kamanda Shari, are you telling me that, in other words, he was asking that this statement that Rav said was like the one that says that's permitted in the Braisa that we said that's Rabbi Yosi, that he says that you're allowed to soak it in cold water, but we just quoted before from the Rabbanan that they say you're not allowed to soak it not only not in hot water, in warm water, but even in cold water. So this that you tell me that Rav said that you go ahead and soak it in cold water and then warm it up in the sun, but how could you even soak it in cold water if the Rabbanan, the majority, argue? So you tell me, according to the one that says the Yachid, the individual opinion, that it's permitted? So he said, no. Afil l'man d'asr. Even according to the majority opinion, the Rabban, that they say generally that it's prohibited to soak it even in cold water, they would say in this case it would be permitted. Because hanemili heichad l'yesh t'klal. When did they say that you're not allowed to soak it even in cold water on Shabbos? Well, you never started this medication yet. You never drank it yet. But since here you drank this medication, this chiltis, on Thursday and Friday, and if you're not going to drink it on Shabbos, it can cause a danger to your life. And therefore, since you started the medication already, that's why they would agree that you're allowed to soak it in cold water and then warm it up in the sun. And therefore, it's according to everybody, even according to the opinion of the Chacham. Another story with the same Amora, the Gemara brings that Mistamech v'ozel Rav Acha bar Yosef akasvider of Nachem bar Yitzchok bar Achse. That is, Rav Acha bar Yosef was supporting himself on the shoulder of Nachem bar Yitzchok, who is the son of his sister, in other words, his nephew. So Amalei said to him, Kimatina lebe Rav Safra, when we come to the house of Rav Safra, Ailinei, so bring me into his house. In other words, he was an elderly person, and he needed someone to help him go in, support him to go in. He says, when they come, they help me get in. So Kimati Ailei, when they got there, they helped him in. And then he waited for him outside. So Boyimene, he asked from Rav Safra, Ma'u l'chaschuse kisintza b'shabata. What is halacha? You're allowed to rub a linen garment on Shabbos. And that is a linen garment that was just laundered, that was just washed. And it's very hard. And they would rub it between the two hands to soften it. So that was one thing that you would gain by doing that. But it would also cause the laundering that was done to it to shine through the rubbing. So there would be two things that would be done. So he asked him the following question. The question was essentially, is that the person is intending just to soften the linen garment because it gets hard by the laundering process, b'shabbat damim, but that's permitted to do on Shabbos. There's no element of isser with doing that on Shabbos. Maybe the person's intention is to create whiteness, and that is to shine the laundering that was done, because by rubbing it, it creates a shine for us, and therefore that would be prohibited to do on Shabbos. And therefore, what is the intention of the person when he's rubbing this linen garment that was just laundered to make it either usr or mutter? So Amalei l'rekuche k'machavim b'shabbatam. He says when people rub it after it's laundered, their intention is to just soften it, and therefore that's mutter. They have no intention. It's a davash ein meskaven regarding the fact that it's going to become shiner and to be an element of liban, and therefore there's no problem. So kinafek, when he came out, also Amalei, so his nephew went and asked him, My boy, what did you ask from Rav Safra when you went into him? So Amalei, boy minei, ma lechastuche kisinta b'shabbos. I asked him, what's the halacha? You allowed to rub a linen garment on Shabbos. V'amalei shabbat amei, he told me it's okay, it's no problem, because again, people's intention is not to be malabin it, to whiten it there, it's only to go ahead and soften it. So his nephew asked him, v'tiboy li lamar sudra, why don't you ask him a simpler type of case, which is the same two options of a kerchief, that there also, when people would rub it, it's either to soften it, or it's to go ahead and whiten it. So he said, no, sudra loy kumi boyli. That I didn't ask him regarding a kerchief that's worn on the head. The boyim Rav Huna partially, because I had asked the same question Rav Huna, and he resolved it for me that to say that there it is also. So then his nephew asked him, so then betivsha lay lamar misudra, so why didn't you go ahead and compare it, that it seems to be the same type of case, to say that here also would be usr by the linen garment, just like the kerchief, that there we say that it's usr, here also it has the same two elements, it would be usr. So Amalei, no. There by the kerchief, it seems like that the intention is to create a whiteness to go ahead, because the person is very makbid, he's meticulous about the whiteness and the shine of his kerchief, more than his linen garment, because linen garment is worn under a jacket, here it's worn on its head, it's what everyone sees. There it's going to be usr, because his intention is to whiten it, to make it shine. Here it doesn't seem like that it's to go ahead and to create a whiteness for it to shine. And therefore here it's going to be mutter by the linen garment versus by the kerchief. It's going to be usr, and that's why it wasn't comparable. That's why I asked him the question. And I see that it was a different type of resolution, that it's mutter and it's not like the kerchief, that it's usr. So regarding the same topic of kesainus, of a linen garment, the Gemara segues into the halachas of muktzah. Rav Chizr says, Haikin tznisa, regarding this linen garment, and we continue on to Amud Beis, Mishlefu ledida mikan yishari, to remove the linen garment from the rod on Shabbos, that's permitted. And that is, when they would go ahead and they would hang up this linen garment for it to dry, so they would stick it in, they would stick a rod in from one sleeve to the other sleeve, and when they would take it off on Shabbos, they would take the shirt off from the rod, and that's permitted to be done. That is no iser. But kan yimimeno also, but to take the rod out from the shirt, that's forbidden. And that is because the rod is not fit for anything. It has the halachic status of muktzah, because generally the pieces of wood that they would use to hang the so to speak, like their hanger, to hang the shirt on for it to dry, was a piece of wood that they would just throw into the fire to use as firewood. And therefore, since it itself has no intrinsic value, it's muktzah. Therefore, again, to move the piece of the rod itself is forbidden, but to take the shirt off it is no problem. So Amar Rava qualifies this and says that it's v'im kli kevai hu mutter. But if it's the rod of a weaver, where their rods that they have are not meant just for fire, where they always use it, and therefore has the status of a utensil, of a kli on it, they would be mutter even to take the rod out of the shirt, and not just to take the shirt out of the rod. Another statement from Rav Chisda in Halachas of Muktzah. Amar Rav Chisda, Hai kishto de yarker, regarding this bundle of vegetables, of herbs, if it's fit for animal food, so then you're allowed to move it. It doesn't have halacha muktzah because you're allowed to feed your animals on Shabbos. But if not, then it's forbidden because it has no utility to it, and therefore it's going to be muktzah. On the same topic, the Gemara brings Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi Amar Rav, Haitalya de Bister, regarding this string of meat. And that is, they would have salted meat that would be hung for it to be dried. And this stringful is called talia. So this string of meat, shari l'taltuli, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. It does not have the halachic status of muktzah because raw meat is eaten as it is. And therefore, there's no problem about moving it. However, the chavri also, but the string of fish, that's forbidden because they don't generally eat fish that's raw. And therefore, it's going to be considered muktzah. Now the Gemara moves on to a whole long discussion towards the second half of the Amid, talking about different topics, and there are different eitzes, a lot of them talking specifically for Talmid HaChacham. Amar Rav Katina says, Ha'imid be'emtza amita, if someone stands in the middle of a bed, and that's a bed that a husband and wife generally sleep in and are intimate together over there. So if someone's standing there in the middle of that bed, ki'ilu oimid b'kreisa shel isha, it's as if he's standing on the stomach of the woman, which means to say that he's going to have impure, lewd thoughts by standing on that bed, to which the Gemara says, v'la milsi. But it's not true. There's nothing wrong with standing in the middle of that bed when there's no one there during the day. V'am Rav Chizda, Rav Chizda says, Bar Bei Rav, regarding a Talmud Chacham, a Talmudic scholar, the Zovin Yarka that's buying vegetables, Lizvin Aricha, he should buy the long bunches of vegetables. And that is, we're talking about a long bunch of cabbage or a long bunch of leek. And that is because Kikisha, one bunch is like the other bunch. And that is, all the bundles of that the gardeners that they would make, of the farmers, they would all be the same type of thickness. And that's how they use the same type of rope. Therefore, whatever fits in that rope, that's what they would tie around. They would sell it at the same price. And the length comes by itself. It's automatic. In other words, this extra length that you're buying from the other one is pure gain. And therefore, he's just giving advice for purchasing to the Talmid Chacham. That is, when you buy the long ones because the thickness is going to be the same. You're going to pay for the same price. However, the length is pure gain. And therefore, buy the long one. Similarly, V'amar Rav Chizda says, Bar Bei Rav de Zavin Kanya, regarding the Talmudic scholar that's purchasing reeds to use as firewood, Lizvan Aricha, again, should buy the long ones, Tuna Kituna, because one bundle is like the other bundle, V'urcha Memela, again, the length is going to be pure gain, and therefore buy the long one. V'amar Rav Chizda says, again, Bar Bei Rav, regarding a Talmudic scholar, to lay nefishale rifta, that it doesn't have a lot of bread, Loy Lechel Yarka, he should not eat herbs, that is raw herbs, for example, as leek and cress, because it pulls a person, it wets his appetite, and is going to make him to want to eat a lot of bread, and he doesn't have a lot of bread, so don't eat these vegetables, because it's going to make you hungrier for bread, which you don't have. Similarly, Vam Rav Chizda says, Ano, me, loy ba'ani yusi achli yarka, I didn't eat vegetables, these herbs, when I was poor, v'loy ba'ati turti achli yarka, when I got wealthy, I also didn't eat these vegetables. And the reason is as follows, Baniyusi Mishum Nagar. When I was poor, I didn't eat it again because it whets the appetite and it would make me want to have more bread, and I didn't have a lot of bread. Ba'atirusi, and when I was wealthy, I also didn't eat these herbs. Da'amina, because I said very simply, Hichad al Yarka, in the same place where vegetables are going in other words, in my mouth, Leil Bisr Bechavri, let meat and fish go in. In other words, why would I anyways want to have that when I could have meat and fish? So therefore, both when I was poor and both when I was wealthy, I wasn't eating these Yirakim, these herbs. The Gemara continues, Vam Rav Chizda, Bar Bei Rav Dulay Nefish LeRifta. A Talmudic scholar that does not have a lot of bread, Loy Livtza Bitsui. He should not go ahead and chop his bread into small little pieces. That is, he shouldn't eat now a small little bread that he has, and then a little bit later when he gets another little piece of bread, he should eat it, because that's not going to satiate him by eating these little pieces. Rather, he should go ahead and wait till he gathers all a bunch of it together, and then he's going to eat it. That's going to satisfy him, and to go ahead and put it all together, not to go ahead and eat it in little teeny bites. Similarly, Vamar Rav Chizda says, regarding this breaking up of bread, Bar Bei Rav Dulay Nefish LeRifta, regarding a Talmudic scholar that does not have a lot of bread, Loy Livtza, he should not be the one to break bread. And that is, when there's a meal happening, and there's someone that makes Hamleitza, he breaks the bread, he should not be the one. My time, or what's the reason? Dulay Ovid Ba'an Yafa, because he's not going to do it with what's called a good eye. He's not going to be generous with handing out the bread, because he's very stingy because of his poor situation, and therefore he should not be the one to break the bread. as the Gemara illustrates, Vam Rav Chisda, Anom Meikar, me initially, before I became wealthy, Lohavia Batsana, I would not be the one to break the bread. Ad the Shadoi Yad Bekulaman, until I put my hand into the whole basket, that is, I would feel around the basket to make sure there's a lot of bread there. And then that I found that I had enough for myself, and therefore I wouldn't be stingy because it was enough to go around. Then I would go ahead and make the bracha of the maitzi and cut the bread to hand out, because or else I would be afraid that I wouldn't do it generously, because I'd be afraid that I wouldn't have enough for myself. Vam Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says, "Hayman da efsholei lamechal nahamadisar," that whoever it's possible for him to eat barley bread, va'ocha dechita, instead he eats flour, he eats wheat flour, wheat bread. He is liable for the isser of baltashkes, which is that generally baltashkes is the prohibition of destroying something that's useful. To chop down a tree that has fruit, and you chop it down to use it for firewood. So therefore he says, similarly over here, he says that if a person can eat barley bread, which is a cheaper type of a purchase, and instead of eat something more expensive, so that's baltashkes, you're wasting it. You would be satisfied with barley bread. Don't go ahead and eat something more expensive. Similarly, the Gemara brings Vamra Papa, Hayman de Efshel Lemishli Shichur, someone that for him, he would be satisfied to drink beer. But Shasichar, instead he drinks wine, or even Mishum Batashkas. You should not be drinking that expensive Cabernet, because for you it doesn't make a difference, you're not enjoying it anymore, so therefore it's Batashkas. The Gemara says, Vlam Nilsi. These two statements are not true. Batashkas de Gufa Adiv. The waste of the body is better, and that is since wheat flour and wine are better for the body in what it could do for you. Therefore, it's not considered batashkas, although regarding the food items is batashkas, but since regarding the person's body, it's not. Therefore, that takes precedence. Vam Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says another idea. Bar Be Rav de Lesley Mishcha, regarding Talmudic scholars that does not have oil. And in those days, they used to anoint their hands before they would go ahead and wash Mayim Achrayim, to get rid of the different dirt on their hand. Nimshi b'mayin d'charitzi, he should anoint his hands with water from the pits. And that is, this is water that was gathered together. It was stagnant water, and it would grow in it some type of a green, thick algae, and it would be smooth and slithery like oil. He should use that instead of oil, because he can't afford that, and that would be a good substitute. Vam Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says, Bar be rav de zavin umtzer, a Talmudic scholar that's buying a piece of meat, lizvin unke, he should buy the meat of the neck. And that is because the isbeit lusim minibisr, there's three types of meats in the meat of the neck. And that is what it means, is he'll taste three types of taste. He'll taste fatty meat, lean meat, and the tough sinews of the neck. So he's going to get three different experiences. So therefore, go ahead and buy that, because that's more enjoyable than just getting one type. Vam Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says, Bar Be Rav Dezoven Kisunisa. A Talmudic scholar that buys a linen garment, lizvin b'din har abba, he should buy it from din har abba, which is a certain type of place where there has good linen, and therefore buy from there, because that's the expensive, good quality type. But v'nechavra kol tlosin yomin, he should wash it and whiten it every 30 days. D'mefatulei treisei achishat, and that way it's going to last for 12 months, and although he's buying expensive, but it's going to last, so he's going to save in the long run. Vani arva, and I will be the guarantor. I guarantee that it will last from a complete year, and that he won't have to buy a new shirt, so therefore, though I'm telling him to buy expensive, it'll be worth it for him in the long run, because if he's only going to wash it every 30 days, it's going to keep it in good shape, and it'll last a full year. Parenthetically, the Gemara asks, my kisin nisa, what's this term that we use for the linen garment that it's called kisin nisa? And then the Gemara says it's a contraction of two words, of kita noa, which means a good group. That is, the person that's wearing this linen garment, this kisinusa, he's fit to be in a fine group. In other words, it shows how chashav the person is, and that's why it's used. It's called with this term of kisunisa. And that the Gemara continues, Vam Rav Chisda, Bar Be Rav, Leilesiv Atzip Techadita. A Talmudic scholar should not sit on a new mat of moist hemp. And the reason is, the mechal yamani, it's going to ruin his garments, that is, the moisture of the hemp will wear out and waste away his garment, so therefore he shouldn't be sitting on these types of things when he's wearing his garments. Vam Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says, Bar Be Rav lo lishter mani lushpiza lechavrile. A Talmudic scholar should not send his clothing to his hostess to wash it for him, to do his laundry. The lavar charka is not proper. As the Gemara explains, Dilma Chazi Be Midi, maybe she's going to see something, specifically carry a seminal emission on his garment. Vasil Magan is going to be repulsive to her, and it's going to be disgraceful, and therefore it's going to ruin that relationship. Therefore, don't go ahead and send it to her and send your laundry elsewhere. Amlu Rav Chisla Bante. Now, although we said many different ideas that Rav Chisla said, now it says what Rav Chisla would tell his daughters regarding their marriage advice. You should be modest in front of your husbands. Don't eat bread in front of your husbands, because sometimes you're going to be eating a lot, you're very hungry, or you're very down, whatever it is, and it's going to be repulsive to your husbands as you're eating so much. It's very not proper or unfeminine, and therefore don't eat in front of them bread. Don't eat vegetables, herbs at night, and that is because it causes bad breath. Don't eat dates at night, and similarly, don't drink beer at night, because both beer and dates cause one to be diuretic, and also it brings to hafacha, to flatulence and passing gas. Therefore, again, it's not something that you want to be doing because of the delicate relationship with your husband. Don't relieve yourself together in the same area where your husband's relieved yourself. And that is out in the open, that they should see you in the fields doing that, because that's something that's definitely repulsive. But even if they're not there exactly when you do that, but if you're going to do it in the same place where they're going to see where they went to the bathroom and where you went, it's going to, when they see it and they're going to realize it from you, it's going to be disgusting. When they see you, it'll remind them of that waste matter. Therefore, don't go to the bathroom in the same place where your husband relieves himself. Kari above inish. When a man is knocking by the door, manu, don't say who's there in the masculine term. And that is in Loshon HaKodesh, there's two ways to say who's there, me who, in the masculine and the feminine. In other words, what he was trying to tell them was that you shouldn't get used to saying vernacular or terms that would be said with males, because you shouldn't be talking to men, and therefore when there's a man knocking on the door, you shouldn't even say who's there in the masculine elamani. Rather, you should say who's there, for example, not me who, but rather me he. In other words, in the feminine type, who's there, so that again, to get yourself used to that you talk to women and not to men. Now the Gemara continues what he told his daughter regarding intimate encounters, and the Gemara talks about euphemistically, as the Gemara always does, which is the proper way of discussing these types of delicate matters. Nokit marganisa b'chada yadi, that your husband should hold on to, that he holds on to the pearl with one hand, and naturally v'kura b'chada yadi, he's going to put his other hand by the kiln, and a kiln is like a kor habazel. That's the place where things are, metal is smelted down, which is a euphemism for the womb, which is when the male gives his seed. That's also developed over there. It's smelted into a child. Another gir Sarashi brings is not that he would put his hand by the kor. Rather, it's a reference to the term is not kor, but boira, rather to a pit, which is a deep pit. Again, both of these are euphemisms for the woman's private part, so that he's going to naturally put one hand on the breast, and he's going to put one hand on the kiln, which is the reference to the woman's private parts, and that's when the husband is touching around in during foreplay to increase his desire for intercourse. And again, like we said, he's holding one hand on the pearl, which is a reference to the breast, and the other hand is going to the woman's private parts. So marganisa achvilahu, you should show him only the pearl, and that is, you should only offer him your breasts to increase his desire that he can't right away go down to the private parts. Don't show him the kiln. That is, don't allow him to go to the place of intercourse very quickly, because you want to increase his desire and his love for you. Adam it's starting until he's in pain, and then you go ahead and you show him the private parts, and to allow one hand on the breast, so one hand on the private parts. That's the way to increase the intimacy between husband and wife. Now the Gemara continues explaining the Mishnah that said, "Ain shoylan esar kashina." Again, we're not allowed to float the vetches. However, it says, "But you're allowed to put it into a sieve." And although it's going to be a process of bar, but since it's going to be happening by itself, therefore that's mutter. But to float it on water and thereby separate the husk from the vetch, that's something that's awesome. And that the Gemara comments that Masnid, our Mishnah that said that the words Aval Noisin L'Techa Kvar, but although you're not allowed to separate it by floating it on water, but you're allowed to put it into the sieve and then it's going to happen possibly by itself, is Deloy Ki Haitan, is not like the following Tanya, the Tanya we learned in the Braisa. Yaakov Aimer, Ein Mashkichin B'Kvar Kolikah, you can't even look at a sieve at all. And that is, he held that even if it's going to be happening by itself, it's a problem regarding Bayer. Our Mishnah that says that you're allowed to put it in the sieve does not hold like that, and says that since it's going to be happening by itself, it's going to be mutter, whereas by putting it in floating on water where you're doing it directly, that's going to be awesome. Now we continue with the next Mishnah, again talking about preparations for food items for the animals. So the Mishnah begins, Goyfin melifnei hapatim. You can shovel away all the food that's in the trough from before the ox that's used to fatten. That is, they would have certain oxen that they would fatten it up, and they would shovel away in the trough that's in front of him on Shabbos to put inside of it the straw and the barley that it would eat, and that it shouldn't be mixed in it, this different rocks and sticks and twigs that are there, that because or else the ox is going to get disgusted with the food that's there. Since we want him to eat and fatten him up, we'll let him go ahead and shovel out what's in front of him to put in only good food in front of him. The second halacha of the Mishnah says, "Umisalkin," and you could move away the straw that's in front of him, let's dudden to the sides. That is when there's a lot of it. Neharei, because of the excrement, that is, he shouldn't be stepping on all of it with the excrement that's on his foot, and then he's going to be disgusted with the food that's there. Therefore, we allow these two different akulas: one to shovel it all out to put in a new stock, and also when there's a lot over there, we want to put it to the side that it shouldn't all get full of the excrement that's on his foot. Again, because we want him to have food that he's going to eat, and he won't be disgusted about it. Divrei Reb Doisa, that's the opinion of Reb Doisa. The Chacham say that it's forbidden, and the Gemara is going to explain now which one of these two statements are the Chacham going on, if it's the first statement regarding shoveling it all out that's in front of the trough, or that it was even regarding this halacha of shoveling to the sides because there's so much that we don't want the animal's excrement that's on his foot to go ahead and ruin what is there. Now the Mishnah concludes and says, you're allowed to take the barley and the straw that's in front of this animal that he's eating from, and you go ahead and put it in front of a different animal to consume from on Shabbos. And we don't say that it's movement of something that's not fit for this other animal, thereby it would be mukta, because the only utility of the item to make it non-mukta is because it's fit for this other animal. We say that no, although it was in front of this animal, it's fit for this animal also, because one animal does not become disgusted with the food that was being eaten by its friend animal, and therefore what this animal was eating, this other one will eat, and therefore it's not mukta. You can go ahead and move it and go through the process of moving from one animal to another animal on Shabbos. So now the Gemara asks what we mentioned in the Mishnah Ibayilu, that the following question. Rabbanon, Aresha Pliga, are the Rabbanon arguing on the first case, which was regarding Garfin, to shovel out, and they said that no, you're not allowed to shovel out all the food that's in front of this oxen that they would fatten up. And the reason why they say that it's forbidden is because sometimes the trough was made out of earth. In other words, it didn't have anything on the bottom. And if he's going to shovel it all out, he's going to intend to smooth out the pits, that when he goes in and puts in the barley over there in the straw, that it shouldn't fall into the holes. That's why they say that to shovel it out will be a problem, because you're going to come to smooth out the pits, which is the issa, the raisa of Baino or Chayrish. Oh yeah, Seifa Pliga, or maybe they're arguing on the second case of the Mishnah, which was told about to move to the side of these of the straw that was there, and the reason why that would be prohibited is because it's not fit for anything. It's considered muktzah because there are those that are there that became disgusted because the animal had stepped in it and there's excrement over there, and therefore the reason why you're not allowed to move it to the side, although you want what's fit for the animal to eat to get the other part out of it, because that part that's disgusted is muktzah now because you're not eating it, it's straw, and the animal's not going to eat it because it's disgusting. So therefore, because it's muktzah, maybe there they argue and say that you're not allowed to move it. Oy, atavei pligo, maybe they argue in both. Maybe they hold that you can't shovel out the case of everything from the trough because of the concern of smoothing out the pits. And also you're not allowed to move it to the sides when there's a lot there, because again, that is mukta. Tashma, the Gemara brings a raya that the Chacham argue on both halachas. The time like within the Braisa. The Chacham say, echad ze ve echad ze. Both cases, lo yisaken l'tzad, and I'll move it to the sides. Again, one is because the concept of muktzah, because it's already disgusting, and the other one is because of smoothing out the pits. Now the Gemara explains that Amrav Chizda, machlekes, this machlekes that we just spoke about, is be'evishal karkas, regarding a trough, that the floor is made out of earth. And that is, there they have this machlekes regarding, since they would make a type of a fence, a small little fence in front of the animal, they would put food in front of it, where there's a concern that you're going to smooth out the pits, the small little holes that are there, because you don't want the barley to get stuck in there. There the Chacham say that it's aser. But if it's a trough that's a utensil, everyone agrees that it's permitted, because what's the problem? Even if you're going to take it all out and shovel it all out, it's metal or whatever it is, and there's no concern about smoothing out the pits. So even the Chacham would agree. And that the Gemara asks, Ve'evishal karka mi'ikalim andashori? Is there anyone that would say that if the trough is made out of earth, that they would be permitted? That to say that there is the machloikas, the Chacham say that it's aser, however, the other statement was saying that it's going to be mutter. How is that possible? Hakamash v'gumas, like you just said before, that Reb Doisa wouldn't say that's mutter because you're going to be smoothing out the pits. So obviously he would agree that that's aser. So, ili'iyat mahochidma, rather, if we're going to say this, we say as follows. That Amr Rav Chizda said, machloikas be'evishal kli. Rather, the whole machlik is only when the trough is a utensil, is a vessel. That there, the Rabbanu were geyser, they were concerned to totally shovel out all the food there, because we're concerned that you might come to do it even when the trough is made out of earth.
And Reb Deisa wasn't concerned about that. But regarding the trough made out of earth, there even Reb Deisa would agree that although he says in the Mishnah you're allowed to shovel it out, that was only because that trough that we said that you could shovel out, the first case of the Mishnah, from the oxen that would fatten up, is only because it's a vessel, but if it would be made out of earth, then even he would agree that we're concerned about the fact that you're going to smooth out the different gumas, the pits that are there, and you're going to be over on Esa the Raisa of Shabbos. Now the Gemara resumes discussing our Mishnah. We said, "Benoit lemalif and behemoth." That we said, you're allowed to take the food from this animal and put it in front of the other animal for him to eat because they're not disgusted from the food that his friend animal was eating from. So the Gemara brings that a seemingly contradiction. Tanachad, we learned in one brisa, "Noit lemalif and behemoth shapir yafa." You could take from food that's in front of an animal that has a fine mouth, which the Gemara is going to explain exactly what does that mean. "Venoit lemalif and behemoth shapir yafa." You could put it in front of an animal that has a foul mouth. However, Tanya Idach, in another brisa, noit lefnei behemah shapir ra, that you could take from an animal that has a foul mouth, v'noit lefnei behemah shapir yafa, and you could put in front of an animal that has a fine mouth. Now, which one is it? Can it be from the fine mouth to the bad mouth, or from the bad mouth to the fine mouth? Amar Abaye, Abaye says, idi v'idi, both of these mishnayos, they both agree and they hold, mikmei chamra l'kamei tur shaklinim, that you could only take from in front of the food that a donkey's eating, and put in front of the food that in front of the oxen for him to eat. And that is because the donkey doesn't drool over his food, and what he was eating did not become disgusting, and therefore it's fit to put it in front of the oxen is not going to be disgusted with the food that the donkey was eating. However, they both agree, that you're not allowed to take from the food from an oxen who do drool and put it in front of the donkey to eat because the donkey's not going to eat it. Also, how do we resolve these two different statements? The Hadik Tani Noitim Lifnei Behemah Shapir Yafa, and this do we say you're allowed to take from the food that's in front of the animal has a fine mouth. That's Bechamar, that's a reference to the donkey, the Leslie Reed, that doesn't have drool, and that's called a fine mouth because it doesn't drool. V'noitim Lifnei Behemah Shapir Ra, and then we said you could put it in front of the animal that has a bad mouth. That's Bepara, that's in front of the cow, as we continue on to the top of Kav Mem Aleph Mem Aleph, the Islay Riri, that has drool. And therefore, what he eats does become disgusting, and therefore that you cannot put in front of the donkey. And what the Gemara is going to explain now is that although at one point we call what the donkey's mouth, we call it a fine mouth, yet on the other hand we call it a foul mouth, a pira, as the Gemara explains, like we just said, it has a fine mouth because it doesn't drool. However, this that we said, that you could take from in front of the animal that has a bad mouth, that's also referenced b'chamor to a donkey, because on the other hand, because the donkey it eats indiscriminately, it eats whatever's in front of it, it's going to eat even thorns or thistles, so that's called a pira. And that's what we meant, the same idea, you could put in front of the animal that has a fine mouth, that means b'para, that's in front of the cow, the dike of achla, that it is meticulous and it eats, it's discriminate about what it's going to eat, it's not going to eat things that are hard for it to eat, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, that it's not going to eat stuff that has a different sticks or rocks in there, and therefore it's very discriminate. That's why on the one hand, each one has considered pira, piyafa. However, the main idea is, as we said before, that you can only take from the donkey to the cow, and not from the cow to the donkey, again, because the donkey doesn't drool, and therefore we call that a piyafa, and it can be given to the pira of the cow, but although there's another brass that says you can take from the pira to the piyafa, that's in a different reference to the fact that the donkey's mouth is ra, that it'll eat anything, and the cow will only eat things that are finer, but again, it's the same idea, because the drool is the main criteria, that the donkey doesn't drool, and therefore you can give it to the cow, but not from the cow to the donkey.